And I thought maybe there would be no Pat Brady. But, Pat, you're joining us. Good morning. Thank you for joining us on the air.
Anytime. Is Scott really sick, or did I see him driving down the center street in a golf cart?
Yeah, well, we did have the option. If you sent me a photo, if you had a Where Scott photo, mm-hmm. and you could text it in, we would find a prize for you.
You know, it's the kind of day you'd be doing that, you know, riding in your golf cart. This is that kind of day.
Yeah,
it's that beautiful.
So we'll have to wait and see what happens. How have you been?
Great. How you guys been?
Good. We have a beautiful day today. We're going to have sunshine and through Monday, so I don't know how anything in the world could upset anyone.
It's totally true.
Happy Mother's Day weekend.
Yeah, thank you. I say that, but then I was talking about our president this morning, and I already upset somebody early in the morning, and I feel really bad about it. But, you know, we were just talking. I know that people are really upset over this whole Comey situation and President Trump and the firing. What's your thoughts on that, Pat?
Yeah, it's problematic. And just by way of background, I used to work at the Justice Department back in the 90s, and I kind of knew FBI Director Comey from a distance and knew him to be a man of, you know, great integrity. But the bigger issue is the reason you have an independent FBI, the reason they have 10-year terms, is they're supposed to not be involved in political issues. And when you have somebody, the President of the United States, firing the FBI director who's conducting an investigation into the president's campaign and its ties to not just a country but a bad country like Russia, it's problematic. And then you lop on top of that the fact that the pretext, or my opinion, the lie they gave to fire him is falling apart right now. Now we're getting two or three different stories. I think it's a big problem for the president right now.
What about the idea of comparing it to President Richard Nixon's firing of the independent special prosecutor in the Watergate investigation? How do you see those two comparing?
There's some similarities, and then there's not some similarities. There are in the fact that in the history of the FBI, there's only been two directors fired, and Nixon didn't fire the FBI director. He fired attempted to fire the special prosecutor that was investigating him. At that point, even the Republicans were behind Nixon's removal. Then shortly after, I think Barry Goldwater and a couple other senators went to Nixon and said, enough's enough. It's similar in the fact that they fired somebody that was investigating the executive branch, and probably equally disturbing, but I think there are a lot of differences. And we're not to Watergate yet, but I do think the president has a fundamental or lack of understanding of the institutions of government, the importance of having independent branches of government like the FBI, that should not be involved in politics and shouldn't be pushed around by the president.
Do you have something? Go ahead.
No, I just, you know, for me, what I always think is really interesting is the process that takes us to the answer is not always the answer. Sometimes the answer is fine, and we want that to get that sense of completion in any sort of issue that we have, you know, with our national government, our local governments, that sort of thing. But sometimes it's a process where I really learn a lot about what's going on. So when we look at what was happening in the Nixon time frame, and we look at what's happening now, and if you, you know, compare and contrast what is and isn't similar, it seems like we're in a day and age when it's so noisy, there's so much noise that it's almost like it's not as cut and dried in how people can kind of just say it needs to be done this way and then we go to the next thing. Is that good or bad for the state of our democracy? It seems good because then more people have voice. But then I also sit there and I wonder if it makes it harder to trust anything, which is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a great point. I remember I was alive during the Saturday Night Massacre. I remember I was probably 12, 13 years old. Every day you'd get the Chicago Tribune or the Pantograph or whatever, and you'd read cover to cover on what was going on in Watergate. And you only had a couple sources of information, and then that's what you believe. Now, like you said, we have all kinds of information that people get from different sources, some good, some bad. So it does make it harder to get a consensus in the country. It's so divided right now. You can go on one website and read all the stuff you want to read about on the right and everything you agree with if you're on the right, and do the same thing on the left. And that process doesn't work effectively, at least these kind of high-level investigations, unless there is some kind of consensus that they should be done and how they should be done. So I agree with you. I think it's better that people are more informed, but I'm not sure about the quality of the information they're getting, because a lot of the stuff I read social media or on the Internet is just garbage. It's not factually accurate, it's not legally accurate, and it's not giving the people the right story. So you really have to be discriminating on what you read.
Well, as of yesterday, though, it's really hard when I sit there and think, okay, there were political reports that said that sometimes in the last week he's been screaming at the TV, and we're referring to President Trump when I say that, and he's gotten upset, and he's acted in certain ways, and, you know, you don't want to believe some of the things you hear, but yesterday, he's, like, in this interview actually speaking out, saying, no, that's not how it went. I planned on firing him. So it's not even like you're speculating in today's society as we're actually getting some of those sound bites from the person direct. And you're thinking, what was the thought process then?
Well, there's two things.
Well, just, you don't have to leave your common sense either. And, mm-hmm. and you, from the time you're a kid, you can figure out when somebody's lying. And you just, when you have inconsistent statements, that usually means you're lying. And that's what I think we have here with the president. He's lying through his teeth right now. I think the problem is they made such a huge political miscalculation on the impact of firing the FBI director on both sides. I think he thought the Democrats were going to say it was great and the Republicans were going to say it's great. But the reality is people care about these institutions and how they operate. And the president is not above the law and he's not the king.
And there's some sort of, no matter what side you're on, some sort of you that doesn't want to believe that he had to read it over the shoulder while he's with his employees, giving them their rundown for the day, as he doesn't find out directly. I mean, there's some humane side to all of us too, I think, that are questioning some of it.
Yeah, if you looked at the reaction too from the West Wing, I suspect, just from what I've read and seen, that he might have pecked that letter out on his own and he gave it to his private security guy to send over to the FBI, which is a terrible way to handle it. But I believe there was a typo in the letter, and that's not stuff that comes out of the White House. You should have four or five people looking at it, and smart people that, and certainly you guys know better than anybody, press people that understand the significance of each word in a letter coming from the president. That thing looked like it was written by a fourth grader.
Well, and then
and
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and then we see that after this letter comes out and this all happens, we're reading yesterday that Sean Spicer is like dodging, hiding through bushes to stay away from media because he still didn't even know what was going on at that point. He's probably being inundated at that moment going, I have no idea what letter you're referring to. Like you would at least
literally
let everyone know.
Hiding behind a bush at the West Wing.
Yeah, literally hiding.
There's a row of bushes literally hiding behind.
Can you imagine that job? That doesn't sound like a job you want to go to every day.
No, I was actually got a West Wing tour a couple of weeks ago, and you have to go on at night. You have to go on after everyone's gone, and I was standing there, and Sean Spicer came walking in, and I knew him from the old days and talked to him for about 20 minutes. I'm like, this has got to be tough. He goes, no, you know, whatever. But he looked okay, but he looked a little tired.
Yeah, it's what he does. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else either of you want to get to on that?
No, I just think it's really interesting because, excuse me, what's so hard to get to is truth in this day and age, because what is it really? And so the more people have voice, that's great. But it just adds so much dimension to how we operate with information, plus the fact that it's kind of uncool to stand your ground. There's a little bit of this kind of, and maybe we're moving out of that a little bit now, but there's been at least a solid 10 years culturally where you kind of have to be flexible and you have to be open to everybody's ideas. And so it's almost like a boundaryless thing that keeps you relevant. And I sit now and I think that puts people, a lot of people, in a position where they don't want to come down hard with an opinion because they're afraid that they'll be undermined, you know, with all this extra information, because it's really easy to, the spin is easy. You know, you can constantly spin. And so if people get themselves spinning, then they, you know, it's unsettling. So you just don't even put the opinion out there. And so the ones who do put the opinion out are polarized. The polarizing stuff breaks through. You know, if you
think everybody just needs to take a chill pill and
just relax about it all. Just kind of like come back down a little bit.
Yeah, and I get it. Everybody gets a lot of information. And everybody's entitled to an opinion. Mm-hmm. Who cares if somebody doesn't agree with you? But
totally.
The bad thing is it gets personalized, and they talk about things about you, not the issue. But I'm glad people have opinions, but everybody needs to chill out a little bit. You know, but things are still actually pretty good here. I don't particularly care for what the president's doing right now, but there is a system of checks and balances. He's not a king. And if he did this and he did something wrong, he'll pay for it. Either at the polls, you'll pay for it otherwise. So the system still works, but people do get it. I thought Jeffrey Toobin's head was going to explode on CNN when this all broke. it was just like, I go, have a beer, buddy. Relax.
Just relax. Here's what it comes down to. Pat, you just want to take him out. You know, treat him to a nice dinner. Just like, you know, kick back on the deck. Just relax.
Well, honey, let's talk about this before you blow up, you know. But
just hang out.
It is. I do this a lot. It's very tough, and I've gotten yelled at by plenty of people. But you kind of look at them and go, okay, I get it. You don't agree with me, but that doesn't mean either of us are bad people. We just don't agree on something. But we're still part of this country, and we're on the same team. So I agree. It gets a little out of control.
So on to another topic real quick here. The Politico has released a story today that we wanted to ask you about, and it has to do with Sherry Bustos of Illinois. It says that no Democrat in the House of Representatives did what she did last November. She wasn't the sole member of her party to win in a congressional district that Donald Trump also took. There were 11 others, but she was the only one, they're saying, Pat, to post a 20-point landslide, and she did it in agriculture, industrial, blue-collar northwestern Illinois. And so they're sitting there saying that this is a secret weapon that Democrats don't know how to use and that she has a lot to offer. And I just wondered if you
worked with her before, or
had an opinion.
Oh, yeah. I do. And we've had her done some media with her. She's great. And she did win in that district by 20 points, and like as you described it. And she is, but she's a great example, I think. And I think you could say the same of Congressman Davis and Congressman LaHood and some of the people in the Bloomington Normal area, people that actually know how to work across the aisle and get along and get things done. And she's not too far to the left where she's screaming and yelling about things all the time. She understands her district. And that's, I think, I wish we could see more of that. Then we'd actually get some things done. But she's, Sherry Bustos, I think, is a rising star. She actually was just put in leadership, too, in the House. And she comes from a long line of very successful politicians in that part of the state. So, yeah, I have nothing but good things to say about her, unless she runs against a Republican, of course, right? I'm just kidding. I like her.
Then the picture may change.
I like her a lot, and I think a lot of people have a lot of respect for her and what she's done in Congress, and we need more like her. And we need more women in Congress, and I'm sure you two would probably agree with that.
Well, and I think that she's very likable. She's a former newspaper reporter, wife of a county sheriff, and the mother of three grown children. I mean, I think for a lot of people, she stands in a lot of places.
And her first job was like, her first full-time job was $16,500. You know, she was just starting out kind of at the very base level, just like so many people. Plus, she gets out there. You know, you got to get out there and talk to people. And don't just talk at them, but listen. And that's huge, too.
Yep. And she's very, along those lines, very nice, very sharp. And just a nice person, presents herself very, very well. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things to say about her. I'm glad she's getting some recognition. I knew that was some of that was coming, so good for her. And it's good for the state of Illinois to have somebody at that level.
Miss anything else that either of you want to talk about?
You know, we got 15 more days in the Illinois House to try to get a budget done.
Are we going to have it?
I don't know. There was some progress in the Senate. I know Senator Bill Brady was working on that. And I down in Springfield this week talking to Representative Dan Brady, and they're working on it. But, and I'm a broken record on this, but as long as Mike Madigan's sitting down there and he's king and doesn't want to give Governor Rauner any victories, I don't think so. And you're going to go into this next governor's race where Madigan says that Rauner's a failure, and which he's not, but Madigan's holding all this up. I can just tell you, the problem in Springfield is Mike Madigan. And everybody that's down there, everybody that knows anything about Illinois politics knows that's what's holding it all up.
They can't give him a vacation day and then vote.
No, he's been down there since I was in third grade.
Oh, I know. It's been a lot of years.
And I'm an old guy.
It's been a lot of years.
It has been.
Yeah, I don't know. 40, well,
it is the drumbeat that you hear every time you talk to a politician. Yeah. You know, we and Patty and I have talked to several in the last month. And it is a drumbeat that is pretty loud. So
yeah, and I don't know.
On him?
Yeah.
And I don't know what, you know, the next 15 days will bring, but somehow a part of me believes it's going to be down to the last hours, which is just so frustrating. You know, it's so frustrating.
Well, that's what they do this, and this is what they've done, or the speaker's done in the last 2 years, is they will give a head fake to making progress in the House. This is not in the Senate. This is in the House. And then, like last year, and they did the year before, they drop a budget at the end of the day, right towards the end of the session, don't give anybody a chance to read it and put it up for a vote, and that budget's $4 or $5 billion out of balance. That's how much power he wields. he controls the entire process. So that's the fundamental unfairness and why we get such a warped result, is there's too much power concentrated in one guy. We need, and there are a lot of great rank-and-file members of the Illinois House and Senate on both sides, you know, Democrats and Republicans, good people that want to get something done. But the holdup is we have one guy that controls, has that much power. He just has too much power, and he's the one guy down there that's opposed to term limits. So we need to do something about it.
Thanks, Pat. We appreciate you taking time this morning.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Yeah, enjoy the weather.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.